Hello and welcome to The Conduit Studio. I'm Paul Finsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a diverse community of people passionate about positive impact. We're recording this conversation live from COP26 as part of our efforts to bring you cutting-edge content, insights, and expertise throughout the conference. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Gary White, the CEO and co-founder of Water.org, a nonprofit organization which helps people gain access to safe water and sanitation. He also leads Water Equity, an asset management firm deploying capital towards the global water and climate crisis. Welcome, Gary.
Great. Thanks, Paul. Nice to be here.
So awesome to see you. So for those people, those very few people who don't know what Water.org does, tell us about your mission, why you were set up, what's the problem you're designed to solve?
So you could probably anchor it in SDG number 6. You know, we need to get safe water and sanitation to the planet. And right now, there's more than 700 million that don't have water, and really more than 2 billion who don't have access to proper sanitation. So Water.org is about kind of creating the market, if you will, for water and sanitation investment to happen. And what we realize is that even people living in poverty, if they can get access to financing, an affordable loan, maybe just $300, they can use that to then get the water solution that's best for them or the sanitation that's best for them. So that's really what we're doing. We're trying to nudge the market more towards people living in poverty to solve their own water and sanitation needs.
So give us an example of the kind of work that you do. I mean, I noticed that you've spoken very much about a focus on individuals and giving individuals choice rather than giant infrastructure projects or building dams. I suspect that you're on the latter, not the former. But tell us a little bit about, like, specifically how you deliver your mission.
So I think a great example would be a woman I met recently in the Philippines. Her name was Lina Riza. She, right before she had a loan from one of our partners, she was paying about $2 a day, you know, $30 a month for water from a vendor. And it wasn't even great quality water, because that's all that she could do, because she couldn't afford to pay the $300 or so to connect to the utility and to put in the plumbing. So she took out a loan, and now her water tariff, after she put in her tap, is about $5 a month, and her loan payment is about $5 a month. So you can see like $50 more in her pocket each month. And what we see is we want to get, you know, many more of these microloans out there. And it's about kind of, you know, the value that's created for Lina Riza is clear, right? It's cash in her pocket. And so what we're trying to do is just kind of share some of that value creation back up the financial chain so that we can bring in the global capital market. So you can think of it as creating the financial plumbing between the global capital markets and women making a few dollars a day so that everybody can win.
And how does it, your business has this very interesting, or your organization has a kind of capital provision aspect to it and then a not-for-profit aspect mm-hmm. to it. And that's obviously a blended finance model, which I think is, you know, increasingly a model that people are thinking seriously about. So give us an example of how those two arms of what you do work together.
Sure. So the two together we consider as a social enterprise. And what Water.org is able to do is to go out and kind of do the technical assistance, do kind of that market correction effort so that things can be de-risked, so that Water Equity then can provide the debt capital to those financial partners. So a lot of microfinance institutions don't want to do water and toilet loans because they think they're too risky. Partnering with Water.org, it's like, oh, we understand the risk, we can de-risk this, so we use that philanthropic capital to kind of get that going so that then Water Equity can come in and say, okay, now you want to scale up these loan portfolios for toilets? Here's, you know, a $10 million loan so that you can scale that up, and we can do that at rates that work for those financial institutions.
So you're obviously at COP, and you know, water is going to be dramatically impacted by a changing climate, and water is essential to human life. When you started on your journey and thought about the impact of climate on water, you were obviously thinking about it deeper than most people did, because you were drawn to an area that you just have to think about climate. But what has happened in recent years that has shifted the nature of your work, and how do you think decisions at COP could make your work either easier or harder?
I think what I'm seeing at COP is that there is a huge emphasis on mitigation, and that's important. What I see also is not nearly as much focus on adaptation, and so that can make our work harder. If we are not looking at investing in projects and in programs that give people more water resilience, then we can backslide. The people who have gotten access to water will maybe lose that. And it's a risk to society as well. I mean, we talk more and more about climate refugees. Well, climate refugees are really water refugees. When you think about that, everybody has to get their water somewhere every day. And if they can't, they're going to move. And so we can think of it as enlightened self-interest, but we can also think of it as the right thing to do to help the most marginal populations have that. And then we can also look at it from the perspective of, if we can now do this with capital that will provide a financial return to investors, then there's no reason why we shouldn't all lean into this, regardless of what's motivating you, mitigation, adaptation, or financial return, or ESG, or whatever you're looking for.
So what sorts of policies, if you were a benevolent decision maker and you were thinking about what people could be doing to anticipate and adapt to what will indubitably be a changed water geography, what are the sorts of things that you think people could be doing to get ahead of the changes that climate change is going to cause?
So I'm going to take it through the lens of what I always do since I started water.org 30 years ago. You know, what needs to happen for people living in poverty that we can do at this kind of higher level, right? We owe it to them for so many different reasons, not least of which because they didn't do anything to kind of put us in this mess, but they're the ones that are paying for it. It's investing, right? I think it is investing in ways that are subsidized by government, to help people who are in abject poverty get lifeline rates of water tariffs. Sometimes that's even free, right? So that you can then take care of the most vulnerable. So using some of the resources for that, using more of the resources to make sure that the infrastructure that is in the ground is more efficient. I was just on a panel with one of the ministers from Zimbabwe a few days ago, and Harare loses 40% of the water that goes into its water distribution system. So you can see that if you can invest in those infrastructure projects in a way that also, and this is where our funding comes in, we require, if we make those investments, that it has to serve marginal populations, but it can also then reduce the carbon footprint. That water, 8 trillion gallons of water is lost every year because of antiquated infrastructure. And that's really, gigatons of carbon that's being lost. And so if we can get the investment from the government and the investment from the private sector and the investment from water equity to come together, then it becomes solvable and a manageable problem.
Are you seeing places where you work significantly put at risk in political terms, either in terms of conflict or social instability due to the changing patterns of rainfall or water storage or the delivery of water? And give us some examples of that, because I'm sure that's a massive challenge in your area of work.
It is, and I think, if I mention two countries, South Africa, Brazil, I mean, these are countries, not too long ago were facing day zero, literally the day that they would not be able to supply water to their populations in major cities. So yes, we definitely see that. And those are the things that make the headline. What you don't see is kind of that woman in sub-Saharan Africa who now, because of climate change, might be walking 3 hours a day instead of 2 hours a day to find the water that she needs. Those are the ones that are less visible to us. Or you look at Bangladesh, my gosh, the saltwater intrusion from the flooding is not only wiping out agriculture, people are seeing a lot about that. I was just looking at a BBC clip yesterday, but it's also contaminating the aquifers that are there. And so, where do you send tens of millions of people who no longer have access to safe water? Where are they going to go? What are they going to do? It's just something that we're not paying nearly enough attention to on the adaptation.
I always love to look at positive case studies, places which have been world-class that you'd want to replicate, that that contain a lot of the sort of accumulated lessons from past failures that have done things well. I'm sure you have a lot of them, but tell us tell us about a place or a country or a municipality or a city that has done something that's really impressive that people who are trying to seriously address the water crisis could look to as a reference point.
It's a great question, and there are so many of them. I would just point to India, really. You know, you had a program that was really instituted by Prime Minister Modi, you know, Swachh Bharat, which was like, we're going to get sanitation to everybody in this country. And that follow-on was, you know, getting piped water access to everyone. And so what was so great about that is the vision, first of all, and it was the resources to make that happen, and getting very close, but then also the innovation. And so we had been working in India for, you know, more than probably 10, 12 years with our water credit program, where these loans were going out, people were getting toilets, they were repaying them. And that became kind of a critical juncture with us and the government. So they're like, wow, you know, if we can work with this initiative, we can make our resources go much further because all of the capital is being leveraged from these microfinance institutions. And so we partnered with them. They made lending for water and toilets part of what they're called their priority sector. That increased the uptake of capital coming in. And now, literally, you know, hundreds of millions of people have access to toilets there now that didn't have it before.
So for those people who are kind of impact investors and finance geeks who are listening in and interested in water equity and how that works, is it, are you able to get some modicum of investment-related returns from the investment in water? Is it a sub-market yield but nevertheless achieves an enormous amount of positive impact on the other side of the balance sheet? But tell us a little bit about sort of if you were to look at it as an investor trying to do good in the world, is this something that you would want to allocate your capital to?
So, yes, I think what we see now, we're on our third fund with water equity. We just closed at $150 million on that fund. And, you know, I would call these attractive financial returns, right? You have to be a little careful with the SEC and things. But, no, certainly attractive financial returns. And like I say, we're on our third fund, and we've been consistently being able to drive that return on equity up. And that's what's, I think, really exciting about this is you can actually come into this. We, you know, we see, you know, moving more into institutional investors, right, who need that kind of return. And, you know, that's starting to happen. We see, you know, high net worth individuals. We see corporate partners that are interested in this. You know, we're working closely with the Water Resilience Coalition, which is a group of 30 or so corporations and growing, you know, ABI, you know, AB InBev, Coca-Cola, you know, Ecolab. All of these folks are coming in because they see the potential to help more people get water, but they also see kind of being able to do that in kind of market-oriented ways.
I was very struck by your comment that faulty, old, decrepit infrastructure, which causes a loss of up to 40% of water, is not just a humanitarian, nutritional, agricultural health loss. It's also gigatons of carbon that are used to produce clean and deliver water. And it seems to me that the infrastructure investment alongside what you do, the major systemic infrastructure investment, is something that's so important. Is that something that where you partner up with other people in order to deliver that?
Yeah, so we're already partnering with utilities to upgrade infrastructure, to also, again, you know, because we are bringing capital, we have some say over covenants and kind of how we do the loans and the populations that need to be served. And we have certain social metrics that we are going to hit as an asset manager to deliver that back to our investors. I think with water equity, we also see the potential to deliver that infrastructure in a way that does feed back to mitigation, right? And that is really kind of the next thing that we're going to be chasing. You know, I see, a potential $1 billion pipeline for infrastructure and climate investment, and I want to push us towards that next. And I want to be able to do that in a way that, you know, this stands on its own in terms of meeting basic human needs. It stands on its own in terms of the ESG that a donor or investor gets. But if we can also tie it to carbon credits and carbon offsets, then I think we can make it work even better.
How would you tie it to carbon credits and carbon offsets?
I think just like we're talking about, if we see literally water leaking out of pipes, but figuratively carbon leaking out of pipes, you know, that's where if we can mitigate that and turn that around, then that can be huge. And it's just the really sad part. I mean, carbon's out there, right? I mean, you drive, get in your car and drive to work, that's carbon. You have a carbon footprint. But, you know, you take home your pay and you support your family. The water that leaks out of the pipes has zero economic benefit. It's crazy, right? And so that just is really low-hanging fruit to tackle.
That is an absolutely fascinating note in which to end. The being able to finance improvements of infrastructure, deliver it in an economically viable way, and also do it in a way that sells carbon credits and makes use of offsets. That seems like an incredibly COP-worthy idea. Gary, I'm so grateful for your time. I know you're incredibly busy here at COP. I'm a huge fan of what you yourself do and what water.org does, and thank you very much for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So thank you so much for tuning into this conversation, and don't forget to keep an eye on the Conduit social channels for upcoming content from COP26. For more information on the Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.